Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it.
The Debatables,
part of the Almighty Baller Radio Network.
Jimmy starts to drive, step back in the air.
Oh, happy step back and kiss myself. Big time plays, big time plays. Woo!
Butler. Talking about the Chicago Bulls and NBA.
Your best source for coverage from the madhouse on Madison.
The ceiling is the roof.
In one corner, host Jordan Malley.
His talk about patience with this team and his talk about direction. He says that the level of patience needs to come with fans and that this thing can't happen overnight. Well, obviously it can't happen overnight, but where have we gone in the last 3 years that says that we have any type of future?
And in the other corner, co-host Matt Peck.
But there are plenty of people out there in Bulls fandom who might look at that potential playoff matchup and say, hey, they can upset the one or the two seed. Maybe they'll get to the conference finals. Maybe they'll get to the finals. There are Bulls fans out there dumb enough to believe that. If you consider yourself one of that population, I say for shame, wake the f*** up. But those people, those Bulls fans do exist.
Looking, finds Rose. Rose trying to get open, fires away. Bang! It's over! The Bulls win at the buzzer!
Kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
That's our goal, to get younger, at positions to get more athletic, and at the same time to retool, not rebuild.
The Debatables starts now.
What's up and welcome into the Debatables right here on Almighty Baller Radio. My name is Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio every Thursday from 6 to 7 a.m. and 11 to noon Central Time. Follow us on Twitter at Debatables and all of our content over at almightyballer.com. We are in the third week of May here and the Bulls still not much conversation going on, but in relation to what's going on with the Bulls and parallels what's going on with the Celtics here. Over the weekend, we saw sort of a, I don't even know what to really call it. It was kind of just an abomination of NBA playoffs, if you would, with the way the Celtics played. I mean, the first time we saw the biggest NBA lead in a playoff game happen, and the Celtics were involved, obviously, on the worst end of it. My first question when I saw this weekend, and it's been churning in my mind, Matt, a lot, is, with the way that this playoffs has been, kind of the trajectory of this playoff, especially the Eastern Conference here, and even with the Celtics winning yesterday and with Isaiah Thomas being out now for the entire series, what kind of, do you feel like the implications for a Butler trade are more so now, less so, or is it still kind of, you know, a little bit up in the air, pretty much the same as it was before?
I you know, Jordan, I really don't know at this exact moment in time, and I think it'll be really interesting to see how the rest of this Boston-Cleveland series unfolds, because honestly, I was expecting a sweep. And that's no disrespect to Boston. And even with a healthy Isaiah Thomas, I just saw that the Cavs were a much better, deeper, well-rounded team. I was surprised that Boston bounced back and was able to win Game 3, particularly after losing Isaiah Thomas. Now that they've lost Thomas for the rest of the series, I think it's, you know, it's fairly easy to say that Cleveland could wrap this up in 5 games. I mean, I honestly don't see it going to 6. As far as what that means for Jimmy Butler and a potential trade there, we talked about this a little bit in our previous show. You try to get into the mind of Danny Ainge, put yourself in his shoes and say, okay, how far away are we from knocking off LeBron and the Cavs? And if pushing them to 6 games, hypothetically, say if that happens, is enough for him to say, yeah, you know what, we're close. We come back next year with a healthy Isaiah Thomas. We bring Jimmy Butler on board, and we still have our guy Al Horford. Maybe that's enough. To me, like, putting myself in Ainge's shoes, I just don't know if I could convince myself of that, though.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of people, too, especially on social media, talking about this conversation. And I saw a lot of people saying that even adding Jimmy Butler to this mix of what the Celtics have right now adding him to the mix wouldn't even keep them competitive with the Cavs, and I don't think that's fair to Jimmy Butler. I feel like he, for a long time and still continuous in this league, is not getting the credit that he deserves as far as a player. Now, he did get voted to NBA third team, All-NBA third team, and we're going to talk about that on our episode on Dash Radio on Thursday a little bit more. We're going to dive into that a little bit more, but as far as like people saying that just adding Jimmy Butler alone to the Celtics wouldn't make them any better, I think that's just a straight up lie. I mean, you're adding a top 15 player in the NBA to a team that we already saw it, even without their best player, knocked off the Cavs in a game that a lot of people thought they were going to sweep. So I think that talk is a little bit ridiculous.
But I mean, come on, how often do you expect to get 27 points from Marcus Smart? Like that doesn't happen. I'm sorry.
And you're not going to get LeBron scoring 11 points.
Exactly. The same night that happened, LeBron had an off night and went 4 of 13 and scored 11 points in a playoff game. Those two things happening on the same night will probably not happen again in this series. So, and look, I'm not saying that adding Jimmy Butler to the Celtics wouldn't make them better. Obviously it would. But would it make them good enough to knock off the Cavs? I just don't see it. And also think about the fact that if this hypothetical Butler-Boston trade were to happen, what kind of pieces is Boston sending away? Because we've heard last year and last year's rumors that the Bulls were interested in Jay Crowder. The Bulls were interested in Avery Bradley. If you take either or both of those pieces away from the Celtics and add Jimmy Butler, how much better do they really get?
Yeah, and even with Avery Bradley playing well in the playoffs now, it gives Boston an extra incentive to take a look at Avery Bradley and if he's really going to be a part of this team and some of those other pieces. I think the Celtics have a lot more questions as far as this doing this trade, or if they don't, than the Bulls do, because then you even have to talk about Isaiah Thomas as a part of that future of that team. Like, are you going to max Isaiah Thomas out and then Jimmy Butler in 2 years when he's going to become a free agent? Are you going to max him out and keep the team together? And for me, like you said, is that enough to get him past the Cavs? And we agreed on this before, and I don't think there's anything that's really changed my mind about it, that I think it'll get them competitive, but I don't think in any stretch of the imagination that they beat the Cavs in a 7-game series, especially if LeBron's still playing at peak performance.
Yeah, which you obviously expect to be the case for at least the next 2 or 3 years. Yes, he's only 32. Yes, he does have a lot of miles on his legs for a 32-year-old, because he's been going to the playoffs and making deep playoff runs basically his entire career, and he came in straight from high school. But it's not like you're expecting LeBron's performance and production to fall off a cliff next year, the year after. I mean, the guy's still in pretty damn good shape for his age and the amount of minutes he's played at the professional level. And assuming that Cleveland is able to keep the pieces around him that they have right now, if that core of him, a healthy Kyrie Irving, a healthy Kevin Love, if that is still the case 2-3 years from now, you know, maybe at some point give a Boston team that adds Jimmy Butler a shot in the dark at knocking him off. But that's as far as I'm willing to go.
That's why I'm curious too. Like, where's Danny Ainge going to go with this now? Is he getting tired of it to the point where, you know, maybe he's getting extra pressure from fans. Maybe he's getting extra pressure from people in the Celtics organization saying, you know, we need to make that push now to try and bring in somebody else to be competitive and stay competitive. But it seems like, I feel like he's leaning more towards the side of what we had talked about previously, which was, you know, waiting for LeBron to take that turn and for LeBron to age and for the Cavaliers to be a legitimate team to be able to knock off in the Eastern Conference. And if you're not doing that, then, well, you're just building a team basically to win the regular season like the Celtics did this season.
And, and like the Bulls did for two seasons in a row.
True.
2011, 2012, the number one seed and couldn't get past LeBron James's team.
And the Bulls then were even more competitive than the Celtics are. If you compare those two teams, even with all the injuries Derrick Rose had and some of the things that happened with the Bulls, you still even look. I even look back to those years 3, 4, 5 years ago when the Bulls were staying competitive even without their best piece at times. So I don't know, like having the conversation over and over again and people still want to talk about it, I don't think it's in the hands of the Bulls anymore, especially the way I'm looking at this playoff. It's more in the hands of the Celtics, and the more and more I listen, it sounds like the Celtics are kind of committed to taking Markelle Fultz, that they really like him. So I don't know if they're going to give up that first round pick or not.
I think they would. It makes sense to keep it, doesn't it? Like, Isaiah Thomas is really good right now. Isaiah Thomas is 28. He's actually a little bit older than Jimmy Butler. Undersized point guards do not age well in the NBA. They can still be effective in a variety of ways if they adjust their game, but they can't be as effective by adjusting their game as players from other positions. As Michael Jordan aged, he adjusted his game and stayed effective. As Kobe Bryant aged, he adjusted his game and got effective. When you're an undersized point guard who relies so much on your agility and your ability to penetrate the defense off the dribble, after more and more years of your undersized NBA body taking a pounding, it's like, how many more years does Isaiah Thomas have being a superstar? Because he just really hit that level this season. How many seasons will that last? And, you know, you see him leaving the playoffs with a hip injury. That's not a good sign. So ideally, you want a star-studded backcourt of Thomas paired with Fultz for a few years that maybe you're contending with an aging LeBron. This is, you know, 3-4 years down the line. But how, you know, obviously, you if they have the opportunity to take Markelle Fultz to then be their next point guard of the future, as Isaiah Thomas might lose some of his effectiveness, I think they can't turn that down.
I don't think so either. And then, like I said, they would have to think about the possibility of having to max out Isaiah Thomas. I know that's crazy to talk about, but he was clearly he's a superstar in this league now. I mean, maybe it's only been one season. Maybe it's only been 1.5 seasons. But I mean, once he comes to free agency, they're gonna have to think about giving this guy legit money for a long term time. And that, like you said, there's that window. Like, you sign Isaiah Thomas, how many more effective years are you, how many superstar level years are you gonna get out of him? And then in the same turn, Jimmy Butler's the same age. How many you're probably gonna get a few more years out of Butler than you will Isaiah Thomas. But in that stretch, you're still trying then to push for a championship during when LeBron is still at his peak performance. If you think LeBron's going to turn the corner in 2-3 years, I think you're overly optimistic as an Eastern Conference fan. I don't think LeBron's going to turn until for 5, 6, maybe even 7 years. Like, we really don't know because we haven't seen a LeBron player age and be in this long and this successful for this long. I mean, it's pretty crazy.
And as much as I rip him for it, and as much as I rip not just LeBron but any NBA player in the modern league, the guy rests. The guy is not, you know, he doesn't care about playing 82 regular season games like the guys of the generations that came before him. So yeah, he has a lot of minutes on his legs and a lot of deep playoff runs, but he also takes care of himself. And if he feels like he needs to rest his body or recoup his body at some point during a long, brutal 82 game regular season, he is okay with taking some nights off. Now, you know, personally, and this is just me, a guy talking about NBA basketball sitting behind a microphone saying, yeah, I think that's kind of, you know, wussy of him. I think it's a wuss move. Hey, you know, take pride in playing all 82 games. If you're a man and you're making this kind of money, go out there and play every night if you can. That being said, it might help LeBron and other players that are star caliber players like him, and it will help their NBA longevity if that's the route that they take, and that's the route that he is taking.
So interesting that we're talking about teams that are potentially set up for the future. And we talked about a possible trade to the Celtics. We talked about the Lakers. We talked about even the Suns, too. We did skip over the 76ers, but now there's been some drawing interest now in the last few days where there's possibility where the 76ers might be looking to kind of accelerate their rebuild, their trust the process. And a really good article that came out on The Athletic today talking about the 76ers and a possible deal for Butler. And with the number 3 pick, I think if you look at any of these teams that are around right now, I think the 76ers are loaded enough to where they could offer probably the best package for Butler in a sense that it makes sense for both teams. And so my first thought with the number 3 pick and just a package that would come around Butler, I think the 76ers have a lot more options for the Bulls to pick from. But in the same token, is Justin Jackson your guy? Is Jason Tatum your guy? Is De'Aaron Fox your guy taking it at number 3? Because you're not getting Markelle Fultz and you're not getting Lonzo Ball. We already know that those two are going 1-2.
Yeah. And as far as who the Bulls might want to be looking at if they were to hypothetically make a trade with Philly to get that number 3 pick, you know, maybe Josh Jackson. You know, obviously the Bulls would love to get their point guard of the future, because I'm sorry, that's not Cameron Payne and that's not Jaren Grant. But I mean, De'Aaron Fox is the next guy on the list, but his weakest aspect of his game is that he's not really a shooter, and the Bulls need a shooting point guard because this roster is woefully lacking in guys who can shoot, particularly from range, and that's really not Fox's game. So in this sense, if you're not able to get Fultz by trading up, I really don't know if you're going to get that franchise-changing guy by trading up to the number three spot.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's an interesting point too. It'd be more like the type of guard that Derrick Rose was, the drive first, player that's going to facilitate your offense. And I'm just looking at his 2016-2017 stats, De'Aaron Fox's, and he shot 52% from two, and then he was only 25% from three. And he's not really a three-point shooter. He doesn't take all that many. I mean, he averaged in college just under two shots from the three-point line a game. So, like you said, that's not his game, I think. But I think a lot of people in this draft think he's one of the best, most athletic talents that could be built. And for the Bulls, it's been so long since they've had a guy that really is commanded that offense. And if Derrick Rose would have stayed healthy, it would have been a completely different conversation. But now they need to find a role to fill that. Is Justin Jackson that guy? And it's the same conversation, I feel like, with Justin Jackson. He's not really an outside shooting threat either. And he could be a player, maybe sort of the likes of Jimmy Butler, sort of the likes of some of these guys that drive to the basket. But in a sense, the Bulls have never had a guy that's really been a consistent knockdown shooter. You know what I mean?
We haven't had one since Kyle Korver on that team that went to the conference finals in 2011. I mean, they thought that maybe Rip Hamilton could be that guy as their shooting guard, and you know, he could never stay healthy, and he was never really a great three-point shooter. He was only okay. He had a much stronger mid-range game. And Luol Deng was a decent three-point shooter. He's been gone for a long time. All of the guys that they tried to bring in, like Isaiah Cannon, right? Like, they signed him in free agency last summer, and I was like, really? This guy's supposed to be an NBA three-point specialist, but his three-point percentage for the number of threes he takes is actually not that great. And we didn't really see much of him at all throughout the entire season, and he had that, like, one random blip in their series against Boston where he performed well. But, look, I don't necessarily agree that you can't say that Justin Jackson could be one of those three-point shooting guys in the NBA. I know his first two seasons at UNC, he was not a three-point shooter, but his final season, he absolutely was a three-point shooter. He set a UNC record for most made threes in a season with 105. And, you know, there's some question about the length of that NBA three-point line compared to college and whether or not players can make that jump and translate. But if you saw that insane improvement in Justin Jackson from his sophomore season to his junior season, you can at least identify the fact that he's a guy who's willing to work on aspects of his game that need improvement. And that's something that the Bulls have found in Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler was not a great offensive player. They drafted him to be a defensive player. But if Jackson can continue to work on that game, then maybe he could turn into a very good three-point shooter.
And that could be a guy you add to on top of, say, if you're going to make this pick with Philadelphia, if you're going to make this trade, the third best guy on the board is also to be in conversation is Josh Jackson. And that's somebody that also, you know, we talk about it, isn't really a three-point type of player. He's more the drive, the aggressor to the basket. That could be another guy that the Bulls look at too. But I feel like if they traded up for this third pick in the draft, they would have to take, I would think they would have to take De'Aaron Fox, just because he's supposed to be, you know, this athletic freak of a talent. He's only 19, and he could be the guy that facilitates your offense and basically kickstarts your offense. But it also comes with the question of what else are you getting in return? Just not even just looking at the draft pick, but what else are you getting in return? And when I was talking about the 76ers having a lot of other assets, I mean, they've got five picks just in this draft, in this 2017 draft alone. They got four picks in the second round. They got the number three pick in the first round. And then if you're looking later, they've got the Lakers unprotected pick in 2018, which is probably going to be a lottery pick. Sacramento's unprotected pick in 2019, which we know the course that the Kings have been on. So you've got the Sacramento Kings pick, unprotected pick of 2019, probably another lottery pick. And then you got the Thunder's unprotected pick in 2020. So if the 76ers were going to build a deal around, I know we've already touched on this guy a lot and said, not a chance, we want him, but Jahlil Okafor, I feel like a lot of those picks would have to be incorporated into this. You know what I mean? But in a sense, that's not really what the front office has sold us on either. So it could just be all of this talk for nothing.
Yeah, I mean, just to clarify on that last point, obviously I wasn't talking about trading up to number three and taking Justin Jackson there.
Talking about
a team that needs shooting. If he's still there at 16, I think that's a steal. But yeah, if they do trade up, I think it's, you know, Josh Jackson or De'Aaron Fox for sure. But as far as potential trades with Philly, God, man, I was terrified that they were going to make some kind of trade to bring in Jahlil Okafor at this past season's deadline, because people kept talking about it. The Sixers were shopping him really hard. The Bulls seemed kind of interested. But I know Okafor has Chicago ties. He played his high school ball here in the city. I just don't think he has a game that fits the modern NBA. Like, I really don't think he has a whole lot to offer as a center in the modern NBA. And I mean, if you were to package some things around him, I would still be disappointed if he were the focal point. Like, I know there was also talk about Nerlens Noel, who ended up getting traded to, who did they trade him to? Dallas, I want to say?
Yeah, to Dallas. And that was the one guy that I would have taken
right,
a
like,
second.
I would have been okay if they actually brought in Nerlens Noel. But, like, I was befuddled. Why are people talking about Jahlil Okafor and not Nerlens Noel with a Bulls-Sixers trade? Because Noel, I think, has the much brighter NBA future, and it's not like they're going to get rid of Embiid now that they saw what he did through 30 games last season. Like, he's obviously going to be a piece of their core with Simmons moving forward. So if you're talking about a trade from Philly, to me, it would have to be mostly draft picks, and I honestly would not want Okafor at all.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at their roster, too, and there isn't any like a secondary piece that I would want that would make sense for the Bulls.
No, I'm vaguely intrigued by that kid they drafted last year, Timothy Luwawu from France.
Yeah,
I think he's got some NBA upside still, but I mean, other than that, that roster is just dog shit. Pardon my French.
And that's specifically talking about the guys outside of their obviously no chance we're trading. Like,
right, exactly. They're not trading Simmons and they're not trading Embiid. Other than them on that roster, who do you want?
Right, and who's really going to be a talent that you can develop? It would mostly be just looking at the draft picks, and really is Philadelphia willing to give up two first-round picks, you know, possibly two first-round picks plus more? I don't know. It depends on where they are, and that's kind of where that this discussion goes from. You know, where are the 76ers in their rebuild as far as, you know, they push Sam Hinkie out and, you know, they're trying to, in a sense, accelerate that this rebuild and try to get guys in there so they can be competitive now. I'm just curious where they might be at with that. And with the 76ers having a lot of money, a lot of flexibility with their young guys, could be a potential piece in talking about Butler being their core main guy in. For me, I feel like Butler might be even, it would make sense for Butler in a hypothetical situation. Butler could still be the face of their franchise. He would come in and be the immediate star right away, help Ben Simmons to grow a little bit, help some of these other younger guys that are a core piece of their process, their rebuild. But in a sense, I don't know. I don't see really a fit, like we talked, with the Bulls getting anything back in return that would make sense for them to just say, all right, hit the reset.
Right.
This is even better than the Celtics.
It makes sense for Philly. Obviously, they would love to bring in a talent like Jimmy Butler to help some of the young guys and turn them into instant competitors. Not going to the conference finals competitors, but obviously a big jump from where they've been in the basement for the last several seasons. But from the Bulls' perspective of, okay, what can you offer us? That is just not an appetizing list.
Yeah, and I think the salaries don't even really make sense either. They'd have to add on a bunch of guys just to compete that and match the salaries. So it's an interesting talk. And I mean, the Bulls had a sit down with De'Aaron Fox earlier in the week. And so the Bulls are keeping all their options open as far as it just could be smoke screens and just, you know, in the sense that maybe somebody gives us an offer that we can't refuse, we have to be up on some of these guys that are in the top three, top five. So it's still interesting. I'm at least intrigued that the Bulls had a conversation with De'Aaron Fox. Makes me think that they're actually considering some of these things and just not writing it off kind of the way that they had said it in the press conference at the end of the season.
It is interesting that they met with Fox and are keeping an eye on him. But the one thing that Bulls fans should be reminding themselves on a daily basis is we all panic or are getting excited or anxious or whatever your emotion is attached to Jimmy Butler and whether he stays or goes, is that the Bulls were not willing to trade Butler to the Celtics when last season their offer, Boston wanted to put a protection on that 2017 Brooklyn pick. They would not include it in any kind of trade package for Butler without a protection on that pick. Now that they know that it's a number one pick, it seems very unlikely that they'll deal it, and it seems very unlikely that the Bulls would be willing to take anything other than that guaranteed top pick, right? I mean, if the Bulls were insisting that they wanted that unprotected and the Celtics didn't agree and that's what broke up the talks, why would the Bulls be willing to deal Butler for what would be at best a number three pick when there is a pretty big drop off after pick one and pick two?
It makes sense. I mean, for me, it'd be idiotic to ask for anything less. And the Bulls were smart in that sense to say, you know, we're not taking anything less than the number one pick unprotected. So for me, I think looking at if anything changes, we'll talk about this a little bit more as we head. We're at the point where we're almost about a month away, you know, a little bit over a month away from the NBA draft. If anything starts to heat up with talks with this, we'll come back to it. But I feel like we've talked about every team that the Bulls could involve a Butler deal with, and at this point, I don't really see any other scenario in which any of this changes. I still think, and I feel like you still think, that Butler's going to be back when it's all said and done, and the Bulls are just going to use their number 16 pick and their number 38 pick, and they're going to try and build with that.
Jordan, the one that you're forgetting that we haven't touched on, and we could save it for a later episode, and I'm half kidding here, is the Minnesota Timberwolves, because I keep getting Bulls fans coming up to me and saying, like, oh yeah, like Tibbs would totally make a trade with the Bulls to get his guy Jimmy, his workhorse, and sacrifice one or two of the young guys on his roster that he doesn't like very much. Like, that could totally happen, right? Please. Please.
And you know who's getting, you know who's going to get fleeced. It's the Bulls.
Oh, of course.
And the fact that trying to, like, create a trade with Tom Thibodeau and then that front office, like, the history alone there makes me believe that they wouldn't even be able to come to an agreement on a trade.
The phone call would be like, hey, Tibbs, listen, we're kind of interested in some of the younger guys you got. Maybe your top 10 pickup coming here. Interested in your old buddy Butler? And Tibbs would say, ha, 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 go F yourselves, shove blank up your blank, and click, that's a hangup.
And I'm looking at, like, they're sitting at number 7 right now. If you're getting a number 7 pick as part of the main part of that deal too, it really wouldn't even make any sense there. Like, they would have to in turn give me, like, LaVine plus somebody on that roster plus this pick plus something else. Like,
yeah, Bulls fans are talking about, like, okay, well, send them Butler and they send us LaVine and Wiggins and their number 8. It's like, Minnesota would not do that. Are you freaking kidding me?
Minnesota's not swapping Andrew Wiggins for Jimmy Butler, even with anything else added to that. That's just not, like, why would they do that?
It's nonsensical. I don't, like, it, for some reason, some Bulls fans think in some magical fairy world that that might actually happen, but no, it's stupid and illogical.
So if anything else changes, we'll come back and we'll bring this conversation back up again. But for right now, Bulls fans, I'm telling you right now, I don't get your hopes up about a trade possibility happening. You know the history of the Bulls. You know the history of this front office. Is their go-to, their, you know, their story written right now is holding on to guys of value to the point where they become invaluable and to the point where they can't trade them anymore or they lose out on their value at their prime spot. Because in a sense, the Bulls are selfish and they're going to sit back and say, you know what, we've got the player in. We're still drawing the money. We're still drawing the fan base. So in a sense, we're sitting back and we're going to relax and we're going to see how it plays out. And for what it's played out in the last 7 to 10 years, it's been mediocre.
Yeah, and I don't see any of that changing next season, and I don't see the Bulls pulling any kind of crazy moves right up leading to the draft. And you know, I think Butler's going to stay, and most likely we're going to see very similar things next season.
I want to talk about somebody. We joke and we make fun of him all the time in this show, and we make fun of the Bulls for making the trade for Cameron Payne. But I feel like at this point, being a Bulls fan and talking about next season and knowing what the front office has already said in their press conferences at the end of the season, you know Cameron Payne's going to be a legitimate part of this future of this team. The front office wants it, whether Fred Hoiberg and the fans want it. The front office wants it, and this is their guy. So obviously, I feel like we got to talk about it.
We're really looking forward to Cameron Payne's new dance moves coming up next season. We're really excited about the energy he's going to be bringing to the pre-jump ball ritual. Yeah, let's talk about Cam Payne. Why the hell not?
And remember the name Cameron Payne from Murray State. He's a guy who I do think can be a lottery pick. He's a lights out shooter. You can't keep him in front of you. He's extremely quick, extremely explosive first step, and he was at his best in the biggest moments. He loves the big moments, loves the big stage, and whoever drafts him in the first round, possibly right in the lottery, I think they're going to get an excellent, excellent player.
For people that don't know him, besides the dance moves, let's talk about him a little bit. We didn't get to see much of him out on the court, and what we did wasn't very pleasing. But Casey Johnson had talked about this in an article he wrote maybe about 10 days ago. He talked with Cameron Payne's former college coach, the one Fred Hoiberg and the one Gar Forman has a connection to at Iowa State. He's now the head coach at Iowa State. He recruited and brought Cameron Payne in at Murray State for 2 seasons, coached him at Murray State for 2 seasons. And there was a few interesting things that his old coach had to say. Obviously, his old coach, first of all, is going to say nice things about Cameron Payne and is going to say great things because he was the lottery success coming out of Murray State that the coach brought him in to be. And props to the coach, props to Cameron Payne playing well in college. But some of the things that he said, I don't know if they necessarily translate to what he's going to be as an NBA player. So this is what Steve Prohm had to say to Casey Johnson talking about his future in the NBA. He said, Cameron Payne is super talented. Once he gets his bearings there, he has a good offseason and gets a feel for the system, continues to develop with a relationship with Coach Hoiberg and the rest of the personnel, he'll be a good fit. It's hard to come in mid-year sometimes. He said he's the most talented guard, the most complete guard I've ever coached. He can have an impact on both sides. He has size, length, and can make decisions in a pick and roll. To me, wow, those compliments sound exactly like, wow, Gar Forman's compliments for Nikola Mirotic.
Wow.
The same sense. You know, like, let me say some really broad statements about the guy, the things that an average NBA fan could say.
I'm sorry, dude, but if Cam Payne is the most talented guard you've ever worked with and ever coached, then you have coached a lot of shitty guards. I mean, come on. Is that hyperbole or what? Because that, look, we saw him play. Yes, he was in a new system, but new system or not, he just looked like a guy who was completely lost, and not just lost and like, oh, I don't know what kind of offense we should be running right now, but even when it was just, all right, dribble, dribble, shoot, or dribble, dribble, pass, like the guy just looks so uncomfortable and not really fit for either a point guard role or a shooting guard role. And like, I thought it was interesting that Paxson essentially gave him an excuse in their end-of-season press conference. He was like, yeah, we're excited about Cam Payne. We think he has a high NBA potential, but we weren't really expecting to see that in the second half of this season. And yeah, I can understand the logic there, and I can get why Paxson used that excuse. But he also said something about him like not being in shape because he was playing behind Westbrook, a.k.a. not playing behind Westbrook and coming off of a minor injury to start this path. I'm sorry, you're an NBA player. Either you're injured or you're healthy. And in my opinion, anyway, the, you know, stamina should not be an issue. But don't tell me that in playing 15 minutes off Hoiberg's bench, the Cam Payne isn't in good enough shape to play. Like, that's bogus. The kid's like 22 years old. Give me a break.
The other point guard that he had on his roster while he was there was Isaiah Cannon, another Bulls sort of prospect project, whatever you want to call him. He played on Prohm's team in 2011-2012, his first year at Murray State. So he's coached both of these guys. No damn surprise that they're both on the Bulls. So if there's another avenue for you to get upset over this Iowa State connections, there's another reason to get mad, because now you got two former point guards at Murray State that coached under Steve Prohm, who now coaches at Iowa State, who's buddies with Fred Hoiberg, who's buddies with Gar Forman. So the rabbit hole continues with this. But for me, I will say this about Cameron Payne. For being a top lottery pick, obviously Oklahoma City saw something in him, and the Bulls still feel like that they see something in this guy at only 22 years old. And for Fred Hoiberg, for Gar Forman to call him out for being, you know, out of shape, which to me, when he was out there on the court, he did look out of shape. And he went to the D League and he had some really good nights in the D League, but how does that translate to the actual NBA? And for them,
short answer is it doesn't.
And I agree with you. But if this is going to be a guy that's going to play legitimate minutes next year, my hope for it is that they do bring Rondo back and Rondo can somehow knock some sense into him and get him to playing at least to the point where the Bulls can salvage something out of him, you know, because this is, like it or not, this is part of your rebuild on the fly. And so they've got to try to push something out of him. That's why I think this summer for Cameron Payne is extraordinary for him. This is going to be a really big summer for him.
Yeah, it's a really important summer for him. And I'm very curious to see who comes into preseason having gained the upper hand as far as who Hoiberg trusts, who Hoiberg wants, backing up Rondo. Because obviously, they're going to let Michael Carter-Williams walk because the guy is the biggest joke the NBA has seen in years. But, and you know, I'd say it's at this point fairly unlikely that Isaiah Cannon comes back and resigns. So you're talking about Jaren Grant and Cameron Payne, right? And then, like, maybe Denzel Valentine is kind of in that mix of maybe looking to get some backup point guard minutes, but we really didn't see much of that at all in his rookie season just now. So of those two guys, Grant and Payne, who's going to be the first one off the bench for Rondo? Because right now I'm thinking about that and I'm not looking forward to either of those scenarios.
Yeah, and if the Bulls even take a guard, if they take a guard in this draft with that number 16 pick like we had talked about, then you have another guard that you have to add to the rotation, to the playing time, and it gets even more crowded. And we don't even know who the Bulls might bring in this offseason, depending on salary cap wise, and like there's guards out on the market too that the Bulls could bring in that could be significantly better than some of these young guys. So we'll see.
Yeah, and but I don't know if the Bulls are going to be able to afford any of those guards that are on the market.
Yeah, like a guy like Patty Mills is somebody I think would be perfect for the Bulls.
Oh, but he would be great for this Bulls roster, but he's playing himself way out of their cap room right now.
Right, and the Bulls want to stay with their flexibility for 2018 like they've talked about, so I don't think they're going to go and nab anybody else that's like going to draw anywhere between like 10, 15 million.
J.J. Redick's going to make more money than the Bulls can afford. Even like a guy like Shelvin Mack, who I thought had a really good season in Utah, coming off the bench, I think he earned himself a bigger paycheck than anything the Bulls are going to be willing to afford. And this is assuming that they do, in fact, keep Nico Mirotic in town, which, don't get me started, that's a huge waste of money. But yeah, I mean, as far as the options of adding another guard to the rotation to replace Carter Williams and Cannon, because, hey, let's make sure that Hoiberg has 18 guards on his roster, none of whom can shoot. But yeah, I think taking one in the draft is very feasible, considering where the Bulls are going to be picking and who among the point guards and the bigs might be off the board when it's their turn to pick.
So to salvage Cameron Payne, what I'd like to see from him is obviously first and foremost get in shape. If the Bulls front office doesn't think he's in shape, and if the scouts are feeding him that, or the conditioning coaches are feeding the front office telling them, you know what, this guy that you guys brought in wasn't really exactly in NBA shape this year, that's got to be the first and foremost thing. You've got to get him in shape. And the second I think would be big for Cameron Payne is to have a really, really good summer league. He's going to go play there with Valentine and Zipser and potentially the other draft picks that the Bulls take and guys that they're going to be looking at. I think going and playing with some of those other younger core pieces that the Bulls supposedly want to build their team around, I think you got to go and find some type of chemistry with those guys now committing to your first full season with the Bulls. I think that's also going to be important. And then exactly who's working him out and how is he developing his skills and how is he going to compete for a spot on this team? And at that point, I think His coach did say one good thing. The guy from Iowa State, Steve Prohm, he did say one good thing, and I think that him and Cameron Payne and Fred Hoiberg got to develop a relationship, and I think Cameron Payne especially needs to develop a relationship with Rondo if he comes back for a season, because there's a lot that I think Rondo could teach him. And with him talking, with us talking about how Rondo had connections with these younger guys and made things fit with these younger guys and had their backs, I think that would be the perfect opportunity to learn under him, especially if it's only for a year.
Yeah, and no offense to the mayor, but as soon as you said, I think it's important that Payne develops a strong relationship with Hoiberg, I immediately was thinking, to hell with Hoiberg. What he needs is to develop a relationship with Rondo, because Rondo is the one who was actually teaching these kids how to play basketball last season. So I'm sorry, I take that back. Yes, I am offending. I am intending offense here to Hoiberg, because look, I didn't see any evidence of him coaching the young guys and making them better. And they were asked, Gar and Paxson were asked after the season, show us some examples of how Hoiberg has grown and how he helped some of the younger guys develop on this roster. And Paxson's answer to that was, actually, I feel like one of the things that we really need to work on is development of our younger players, a.k.a. Hoiberg didn't do his job in that sense. So, you know, don't talk to me about Hoiberg and Payne. I want to see if they do indeed exercise their team option, bring Rondo back, if Rondo is kind enough and dedicated enough to spend summer league with these young guys again, as he did last summer, then obviously that's the ideal, right? Is Cameron Payne learning from Rondo, Rondo watching Payne in summer league, seeing what he can do, what he's good at, what he's bad at, and say, okay, coming into the season, here's what you need to do. Because that, to me, Rondo is that guy above and beyond Hoiberg. And that's, just, I mean, it's a disgusting fact when the Bulls signed this guy to a five-year, $25 million contract, but that's the situation.
Hoiberg needs to figure out his rotation first, too. So he's got a lot on his plate to figure out, too, as well. All right, looking at who we're going to talk about some more people we think that the Bulls will take at number 16. This is the surefire pick. We know the Bulls are going to pick at 16. We've been talking about other prospects and players that the Bulls can bring in at this spot. We talked about Terrence Ferguson and Luke Kennard and Hamidou Diallo. We talked about a lot of other big men that maybe possibly could go at 16 or even at that number 38 pick. So if you want to listen to that, over the last couple weeks, we've been talking about a few different players in each episode. The last ones we touched on was Luke Kennard and Hamidou Diallo. So those are interesting picks. But going in sort of looking at big men now again, talked about it, the Bulls are probably going to go in either route, and that's kind of explain what they're going to do with their second round pick too. And so for me, if they're going to take a big man and a guy that I touched on briefly in the last episode, but I want to kind of break down a little bit more, is Jared Allen.
Allen throws it down!
The dunk of the year! The dunk of the year in the league! Oh my goodness!
All that Fran was looking for, so we can see this again.
Watch this, man. Look at that dunk. Talk about reach. That's 7'6" right there. And we know Kanate is a shot blocker. Oh my goodness.
So early on, when the season was over, people thought Jared Allen was going to be a potential lottery pick. And it seems like from the combine and from some of the outlets now, he's been slipping. He's been slipping from that 10 to 14 range now down to sort of where the Bulls are picking, between 15 and 20. So for Jared Allen, 6'10", 224 pounds. He's got a wingspan of 7'5". He's 19 years old, playing from the University of Texas. And so while Texas didn't have all that great of the year, they were a bottom feeder in the Big 12. Jared Allen had a really great season for them. 32 minutes, 13.1 points per game, 8.4 rebounds per game, shot 56.6% from the field. He was second in Big 12 field goal percentage among the players. He was a top 15 scorer in the Big 12. He was third in rebounding in the Big 12, fourth in offense, third in defense. He was fourth in block shots, and he played the ninth most minutes in the Big 12 this season. So for Texas, for them to have an underwhelming season with a five-star recruit coming in, a top 20 recruit in Jared Allen, he he had a nice season for himself, and I think he's slipping down in boards just because, like we've talked about with the national media and with some of these other guys, some people get so hung up on what they did for their team. And while that is a tangible reference to go for a lot of draft picks, I think it's not everything to look at. And the player I compare him to most is the guy that came out of Texas before he did that was underrated, and people said that the Pacers took way too much risk in taking him, and he's paid dividends for them. That's Miles Turner. So what do you think about Jared Allen?
Look, I think he definitely has NBA potential. I love that big wingspan, almost 7'6" wingspan. He can be very dominant on the glass, and he also, unlike a lot of big men in today's NBA, actually has nice soft touch around the rim. He actually has developed himself a nice little like baby hook, which for modern NBA centers is sort of like an art that's gone lost to this modern age. The two hangups I have with taking a guy like Allen for the Bulls specifically is scouts have questioned his work ethic and his consistent level of effort. They say he takes some plays off, and when you go and look at the tape, it's true. He can be an absolute freak on the glass and dominant inside, but he doesn't do it consistently when he's on the floor. You did mention he's playing a heck of a lot of minutes, so that might have something to do with it. But the other one, and this is more Bulls-centric, is that he's a big, and he could be a great big for an NBA team, but he offers no shooting. And I know the Bulls always say we're going to go best available regardless of need, but I'm sorry, in this draft, you have to go with need, and you have to address that need of shooting, specifically outside shooting. And even Paxson even admitted it in their press conference. He said, when it comes to this draft, we're definitely going to look for a shooter. And he said it can be somebody who can shoot, and it doesn't matter positionally, you know, a point guard, a shooting guard, a wing, a power forward who's a stretch four. Anywhere on the floor, we can add shooting because that's how desperately we need shooting. But Jared Allen is an example of, well, yeah, this guy really only plays one position on the floor, and he can't spread the floor for you. So that's why I would say it's unlikely that the Bulls take him.
Yeah, the only thing I was thinking of as far as taking him would be your options this summer as far as they're going to have to take a look at Joffrey LeVern. Obviously, he can walk out the door. I don't really care about him. He's going to be a restricted free agent. You got questions about Cristiano Felicio, too, what kind of money he's going to get in free agency with him being a restricted free agent. So the Bulls do have some questions to answer as far as that goes. So if they decide not to pick up the options on either one of them, then maybe the Bulls look at a big man. But I think you're right wholeheartedly. I think the Bulls, first and foremost, what they need to do with the 16th pick is find somebody that can shoot. This is a good option if you don't feel like there's guards out there at the 16th pick that really are worthy of that 16th spot and can come and be impact right away. This is a solution to be a guy that maybe you could build for the future as part of your front court with, say, a Bobby Portis. But you already know Bobby Portis is going to be your center of the future. He's not a center, and he's not playing center, and they figured that out this season. So you're going to need to find somebody to fill those roles, especially like if you don't bring any of the three back, Nico, Cristiano Felicio, or LeVern, then you're going to really have some questions as far as your big men, especially rotation players.
Yeah, obviously, if they don't bring back, you know, it's not like Nico's ever playing any minutes at the five. But if they lose out on Felicio, say they decide to match any offer they get for Nico and make that a priority ahead of Felicio, and Felicio's gone, then yeah, all of a sudden you're looking real thin at the five because, as you mentioned, Portis can't play the five. We've learned that fairly quickly. So if that's the case, and there's a big drop off as far as the kind of shooters they're looking for and who's available at 16. Yeah, I could see that theoretically happening. But like I said, I think it's far more likely to see them address their need of shooting. And hey, there are some bigs in this draft who, might not necessarily be great depth shooters, but have that ability to improve upon that aspect of their game and turn it into a skill at the NBA level, whereas I don't think Allen can do that. Comparatively, like Justin Patton from Creighton, Zach Collins from Zaga, like I think those two have a higher potential to be spread kind of bigs in the NBA than Jared Allen does.
Yeah, and I think the Bulls could also take a look at their 38th pick and address this sort of rotation development player as far as the four or the five goes. They could address that with the 38th pick. I think I feel like there's a lot of guys in the early second round that could potentially be projects that the Bulls could work on. Guy names just popping off right now, like Bam Adebayo from Kentucky. I think he's somebody that keeps continuing to slip in these boards. So if he's there, maybe even Thomas Bryant. I mean, Thomas Bryant's got sort of the same height, same wingspan. That's why people were interested in him. Obviously, he's a little bit more of a project than Jarrett Allen is. There's a few other names too. Jonathan Motley from Baylor. He was the number one rebounder, the highest shooting percentage in the Big 12. That was kind of the guy that Jarrett Allen was chasing all season. So there are some interesting names at 38 if the Bulls do go for a guard. Who's the person that you're thinking of now, that somebody that we haven't talked about? Is there another name at 16 that you were thinking of?
Yeah, there's another guy who has really he really impressed people at the combine, and he's been climbing up draft boards. He was originally slated as like a, you know, middle of the second round guy, and he's started to climb up into the mid to late first round, and that's the 4-year wing from Kansas State, Wesley Iwundu. I watched the tape on this kid, and I was really impressed. He is a 4-year guy, which, you know, the Bulls love guys like that. He's 6'7", which is a great for like a combo shooting guard, small forward in the NBA, with nearly a 7-foot wingspan. So that I love, that length, when you're talking about guys who can defend multiple positions, including the perimeter. He's a quick defender. He's a strong defender. He could turn into a Luol Deng type defender at the NBA level. And he's also a pretty darn good playmaker on the offensive side of the ball. Based on his tape and a couple of the games I saw Kansas State play this season, he can attack the basket. He's fairly skilled ball handling for a guy his size. And similarly to Justin Jackson at UNC, first few years in college, not a great 3-point shooter, but addressed that. In his senior year, he saw a marked improvement in his 3-point percentage and the frequency in which he shot those 3-point balls. So as far as that Bulls knee that we're talking about, he's not exactly an immediate plug and play there, but he also just has all these other upsides on the offensive end and particularly the defensive end. I think he is worth a look. If some of the other guys that say the Bulls have hired on their board are all gone, might be an option B who has a pretty promising NBA career in front of him.
So do you think the Bulls can get him with their second round pick? Or are you talking about as high as like their first round pick?
Well, back, you know, about a month ago, I was thinking they might actually be able to steal this guy in the second round, because they're early in the second round, right? They're
38th. Yeah, so eighth.
Right,
yeah.
So the eighth pick of the second round. But based on the recent mocks I've seen, based on what I heard from the combine, this kid, Iwundu from Kansas State, is actually now looking like he could be going in the first round. But, you know, so it might be a reach for the Bulls to take him at 16. There might be somebody best available who's ranked higher than he is, but I'm not expecting him to be there in the second round when they have that 38th pick.
I think with everything with the Bulls, as far as their need goes, I think one, if you're trying to look at a highlight of what the Bulls exactly need in this draft, I think a good thing for the Bulls is really they need everything. So taking, you know, looking at multiple positions and looking at multiple players in multiple positions is a good thing for the Bulls in a sense. I mean, it's not a good thing that the Bulls are hanging in mediocrity, but in a sense of going into the draft and knowing what you need, it doesn't eliminate any player from being a possibility for the Bulls. It's interesting, guys are flying up and down the draft board. So once, I feel like the Bulls over the last few weeks have been sort of tight-lipped on guys that they're extremely interested in, while other teams are kind of letting people know that these are the players who were working out, these are the players who we're talking to. The Bulls, for me, I feel like are very tight-lipped about, you know, exactly what who they have their eye on and who guys are that they could potentially pick. And I don't know exactly what the reasoning is for that. Maybe it's just because that's how always the Bulls have always operated. They're just always tight-lipped and don't really say anything, but there's a lot of potential options out here. But for me, I feel like first and foremost, if the Bulls are going to take anybody, and we talked about this guy the very first time you brought him up, I think Justin Jackson's my go-to at 16. I still like him a lot as far as a 4-year player goes. If he's potentially there, or 3-year player, if he's potentially there still, I feel like that's got to be the guy that they take. But again, like we said, maybe the Bulls just go with best option available there.
Yeah, and as we've been talking about, I don't care necessarily where they plug that guy in on their floor and in Fred Hoiberg's system, as long as he can shoot the ball. I don't care if they take a stretch four, a wing, a shooting guard, a point guard. Take somebody that can confidently become an NBA three-point shooting threat as a rookie, or certainly as a second-year player if he has a tough time getting into the rotation. But this team that keeps talking about addressing their needs, a year ago they said younger and more athletic, and then they signed two aging veterans to grotesque contracts. How about this time, if you tell us in your end-of-season press conference that you need some shooting, go out and find yourself some goddamn shooting? Is that too much to ask?
You would think not, but, I mean, this is the way the Bulls...
You can never be too sure with this front office.
It's very true.
It's time to log off. The worst takes on social media of the week, exposed by Jordan and Matt. From the hot take kingdom that is Twitter, we kindly ask you to log off.
This is not a test.
All right, for log off today, I have something for you, Matt. As we finish up the show, I've got a great one for you. So
hit me with it.
Saturday, we obviously see the playoffs are continuing. We see that the Cavaliers and the Celtics, this is before the Celtics, you know, got their first win. This is coming off the game that the Celtics were at one point down 52 points in the game.
They lost by like 44, right? I mean, yeah it's gross.
It's insane. So in that sense, I was waiting for the national guy, one of these national guys, somebody that maybe has never watched a Bulls game this season, to come out and say something about them with Rondo. And sure enough, someone did. Skip Bayless comes out and says on Saturday night, he says, "Injury gods decide this year's playoffs. With a healthy Rondo, the Bulls would now be 1-1 with the Cavs going to Chicago. 4-0 versus the Cavs during this season." Dude, in one tweet, you've just explained to the entire world that you have no idea what the Bulls are, and you probably have never watched a regular season Bulls game. And you know what? I'm not throwing shots at you for watching a Bulls regular season game, because I don't blame you. And there's reason for that, because they were bad. They were really bad. And for people to even talk about that the Bulls could possibly get past the Celtics in the first round is insane. And then the even more insane conversation is that they would get past the Wizards. I think the Bulls would get wiped by the Wizards. How about in that sense, Skip Bayless, how about you talk about the comparison between the Bulls and the Wizards? Because that's the team that they would have to get past to try and get to the Cavs. And the Bulls were awful against the Wizards. So for me, saying that having a healthy Rondo would put the Bulls back in the Eastern Conference Finals with this team, a team that went 41-41, and you got Cameron Payne and Isaiah Cannon playing legit minutes, and Michael Carter-Williams playing legit minutes for your team? You got to be kidding me.
That's ridiculous. I mean, we've come to expect this kind of nonsense from Skip over the years, and I feel like, you know, he's playing a caricature, and he does it for shock value. So whether he's tweeting or whatever his new show on Fox Sports is that nobody watches, it's just shock value theater and nothing more. And his basketball mind is atrocious. And you mentioned, yeah, he probably didn't watch any Bulls games this season, and that's why he doesn't know what he's talking about. Any Bulls game that he did happen to watch was probably a nationally televised game on TNT when the good Bulls showed up and won. And, you know, probably a couple of those games where the Bulls beating Cleveland. But him citing the Bulls sweeping the Cavs in the regular season just shows that he has no idea what the difference between regular season basketball and playoff basketball is. Because the Bulls had this tendency for years now to beat the best of the best in the regular season and then cave in the playoffs. And as you mentioned, people say, oh man, if Rondo didn't get hurt, the Bulls would sweep the Celtics. No, not even convinced that they would actually even win that series, even with a 2-0 lead, if Rondo stayed healthy. And yes, the Wizards would be a terrible matchup for the Bulls, and they certainly wouldn't get past them. And no, if by some crazy stroke of luck or miracle that happened, come on. No. You're seeing the Cavs' utter dominance over Boston, and we already touched on the strange factors that led to Boston stealing Game 3. But I think that's about it as far as the competition we're going to see in this series. And the Celtics, once they figured out a couple of things, made quick work of the Bulls, a.k.a. swept them straight out. in four. So
the Bulls,
come on now.
The conversation that the Bulls don't would be even be in the conversation to be in the Eastern Conference Finals is just ridiculous. I don't know. Skip Bayless is very smart. He's a very smart guy. He went to Vanderbilt. He's got the more education than most people do in this country. Like, that's why I'm saying, like, he's been in sports for a very long time. He obviously know that's an insane thing to say, but like you said, he's about shock value. He's about people ripping him and him just saying the most ridiculous thing to get his name in the news. It's not a new tactic in media. It's not a new tactic in sports. Look at the idiot that we spent the last three consecutive episodes talking about. I'm not even going to say his name on this, but look at this. Look at that idiot. He just goes out there and says stupid things for shock value too. So
yeah, and guess who is one of the people who loves to bring him on their show? Skip Bayless.
Right, and it's not surprising. And both of them said stupid shit on Undisputed. But that's a different conversation for a different time. I thought that was laughable, and everybody that entered Skip Bayless's mentions after that tweet was just destroying him.
The only thing people need to know about Skip Bayless is that he accidentally forgot to log out of his personal account into one of his fake fan of the show accounts to compliment his new show, which is just as god-awful as First Take when he and Stephen A. were doing that. The dude actually gives himself fake compliments from fake Twitter accounts to try to get people amped up about the garbage that he's putting out there.
I got to ask you one more thing as we wrap up, though. So I did catch Colin Cowherd's show earlier last week. He was talking specifically about Jimmy Butler. And if you know anything about Colin Cowherd and what he says about Jimmy Butler, he loves Butler.
He loves Butler.
And he's a guy that says Jimmy Butler's a top 10 player in this league and could even be considered a top 7 player in this league. And so I'm curious, like, he was talking about a trade between the Wizards and the Bulls, just a really stupid hypothetical like they like to do, and said that if he was looking at either of those teams and looking for a player to build around your team, he said he would take Jimmy Butler over John Wall every day, where I was sitting there and like, no, please, like the Bulls are going to get fleeced by any other team. Like, if they're willing to take John Wall and they're going to give us John Wall and we're going to give Jimmy Butler back plus things, like, take it immediately. But Jimmy Butler gets high praise in this from a lot of national spotlights, and so for them to say, like, him to say he'd rather build his team around Jimmy Butler than John Wall, but obviously there's beef there too. He's been known for being a guy that just hates John Wall, doesn't like his game, doesn't respect him. So I was curious what you thought about that.
I think that John Wall is a great player, and I think he goes underrated and underappreciated in a lot of NBA circles, and it's just about the kind of guy you want to build your team around, right? I mean, they play different roles on the floor. I think I would probably rather have Jimmy Butler to build around than John Wall, but that's just because I find more value in Butler's two-way game and the versatility that he brings to the floor. I'm not saying John Wall is a bad defender, but he can't do as much as Jimmy Butler can do defensively. And while John Wall might be a little bit more gifted and versatile offensively, we've seen improvement upon improvement upon improvement from Butler's game on the offensive end. I think overall, I'd give a slight edge to building around Butler.
Yeah, and this is going to be the conversation. Once the finals are over, this is going to be really the conversation that's going to be ramped up. And we didn't even talk, and we'll get into this in the next episode that's going to be on Dash Radio, but I want to have the conversation once and for all about Paul George and Jimmy Butler and the value there, because I don't think we really talked about that. And for what I feel like is going on in NBA conversation, I feel like people are talking about Paul George being the higher asset and being the better player over Butler. And for me, I don't know, and I feel like maybe you think the same way, is that Butler is the clear and cut choice better than Paul George. Maybe not for some teams, but for me, the conversation is if Indianapolis is asking for a first round pick plus for Paul George, like, you can't expect Butler to be anything less.
No, and there's a, you know, a different circumstance here because George has one fewer year remaining on his contract than Butler does, so that's obviously a big important factor. But if assuming they were on similar contracts with similar remaining duration, come on. I mean, go back and look at Paul George's stats from this year. They're not that great, and primarily, go back and look at his performance and his box scores in some of Indiana's premier matchups where he is playing the best competition in the NBA, where he is playing up against one of his greatest competitors at his position. I mean, like playing against LeBron, playing against Kawhi. Paul George had awful games when the Pacers were playing premier opponents.
Well, that's good about do it here on the Debatables. Thank you so much for listening. We're going to have a huge conversation talking about some of the NBA All Teams on Thursday on Dash Radio. So you're going to want to follow us for that. We're going to have a huge... I want to talk a little bit more about this as we were talking about this to exit the show. I want to talk about the Paul George, Jimmy Butler comparison and what those talks will be this summer, especially the connotations with Paul George wanting to go to LA and how that's going to affect it. And that those types of conversations that are going to be happening. We're also going to talk about is it time for the NBA to maybe resurface and relook at this whole players getting money decided by sports media people. I think this is a conversation that needs to be had. We're going to have that conversation on Thursday with a boatload of other things. You got to catch us on Dash Radio. If you haven't downloaded the app, go to the Android, Apple Market. Anywhere you find apps, you're going to find Dash Radio there. We're there every Thursday from 6 to 7 a.m. and 11 to noon Central Time. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Debatables and all of our content at allmightyballer.com. For Jordan Malley and Matt Peck, we are out. See you on Thursday.
Stay in your lane.
Will you stop it? Don't advertise on TV. That don't make any sense.
I remember at nights I would come in the gym. I'm thinking of him by myself, and I look up, and I see P on the treadmill.
What?
Everybody used to say, who was the best, Michael Jordan or LeBron?
Who did you think was the best?
Who was the best? Kobe or LeBron?
Who did you think was the best?
Guess what the story is now. Who's better, LeVar or Michael Jordan?
Nobody think about no damn LeVar.
Those are some good nuggets. Good thing somebody told you them.
That's not the first time you've said those are some good nuggets either.
The Debatables, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories of the week. The Debatables, live on Dash Radio every Thursday. New episodes available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and at almightyballer.com.